At this time, I will introduce Dr. Emma Frazier. She will present factors associated with cervical cancer screening among human immune deficiency virus HIV infected women, United States, 2007-2008. Dr. Emma Frazier is a senior data researcher in the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Her primary research focuses on women's health and health disparities in chronic diseases and HIV/AIDS. She has been with the CDC HIV/AIDS Prevention Group for the past 4 years. I'd like to introduce Dr. Emma Frazier.
Good morning, everyone. Today I'd like to report the findings on the factors associated with cervical cancer screening among HIV-infected women in the United States. This data is based on findings from the 2007 Medical Monitoring Project. I have no relationships to disclose. A little bit about the background of HIV in women. A recent report from CDC estimates that in 2009, there were 1.2 million adults and adolescents living with HIV/AIDS in the United States. Roughly 25% of those individuals were women. A disproportionate number of women, particularly those of color, are impacted by HIV. Black women account for 64% of all women who are impacted by HIV/AIDS, while only 12% of the U.S. population. In 2009, there was an estimated 48,100 new infections among adults and adolescents. About 23% of those infections are among women. Most new infections are also heavily impacted by among Black and Hispanic/Latino women. A little bit about cervical cancer among HIV-infected women. HIV-positive women are 5 times more likely than HIV-negative women to have cervical dysplasia and cervical lesions, which may lead to cervical cancer. These women are an increased risk compared to women of the general population for HPV, precancerous lesions, as well as cervical cancer. Pap tests can detect cervical abnormalities in early stages. These detections by the use of pap tests may allow for early treatment to prevent cervical cancer. In addition, this early detection can lead to a reduction in mortality from cervical cancer among these women. With this, we looked at the cervical cancer screening guidelines. The cervical screening guidelines say that for sexually active women, they should obtain a pap test every 3 years, starting at age 18 and continuing up until age 65. For HIV-infected women, pap tests are recommended to be performed at baseline evaluation and repeated every 6 months until diagnosis, and thereafter annually if the woman is not positive for cervical cancer. They were repeated annually thereafter. With these, we developed the following research questions. One, are HIV-infected women in care receiving pap tests as recommended by cervical cancer screening guidelines? And secondly, what factors are associated with not receiving a recommended pap test? With this, we employed the data from the Medical Monitoring Project. This is an ongoing surveillance system which is sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control. This system is a cross-sectional study. It has been collecting data since 2007 on an annual basis. And that study is also currently being collected now across the U.S. The study basically contains self-reported face-to-face interviews as well as medical record abstraction data. The presentation today will focus only on self-reported face-to-face interviews. Particularly, we look at HIV-infected adults who are age 18 and older and are currently receiving medical care for HIV. The survey itself collects information on behavior, care, as well as clinical outcomes. The study actually collects data using a three-stage sample survey methodology. Stage one involves the selection of the project areas. In our funding, in 2007, we funded 19 states, one U.S. territory, and six cities. That was stage one of the survey. And stage two, each of those 26 project areas identified outpatient facilities that provided care to HIV-infected individuals. We randomly selected 582 outpatient facilities, and within those facilities, we obtained a patient list of all adults receiving care. We selected a certain number of adults proportional to the size of the estimated patient load within each of those facilities. So our primary sample were all adults who were 18 years of age and older who were receiving care at least once during a predefined sample period. So we looked at individuals if they were in care between January and April of 2007, they were eligible to be included within our sample. And this map shows the location of the 26 project areas. Again, 19 states, Puerto Rico, and six cities. For the women in this analysis, in 2007, we actually collected a total of 3,944 interviews. Women represented about 26% of that population. And for inclusion in this study, we're looking at receipt of pap smear within the past year so that we can identify those who are meeting guidelines. So we had some exclusions and limitations for inclusion in this analysis sample. We excluded women who were diagnosed less than a year ago, and there were five women who said they were diagnosed with less than 1 year ago before they were being interviewed. There were 22 women who could not tell us what was the date of their first HIV test, so hence we couldn't determine whether they were diagnosed less than or greater than a year ago. And there were 96 women who could not tell us when and if they had a pap test, okay. Which in this group is an important group itself, and there are different characteristics, but for purposes of this presentation, we're not presenting those results. So the analytic sample size for this study is actually 910 women. What were the variables we examined? For the dependent variable, we were interested in finding out, was there an annual pap test more than a year ago? And we looked at several independent variables. These were certain selected entities from the self-reported questionnaire. We looked at age, race, education, whether or not the woman received any public assistance. For engagement in care, we were interested in looking at when was the last time they received care? Was it more than 3 months ago from the date of when they said they last received care up until the time they were interviewed? And what was their most recent CD4 test? Encounters with the healthcare provider, were they seen by an OBGYN? Did they have a usual place of care? Did they have safer sex discussions with a provider? And lastly, preventive healthcare measures such as STD testing and receipt of the influenza vaccination. For our methodology, we employed chi-square tests and we looked at unadjusted odds ratios. We also computed adjusted odds ratios using a multivariate logistic regression model. For inclusion in those models, we included all variables that had at least 0.10, p less than 0.10, and we included those in the model to determine whether or not women had not received a pap test within the past year. And we also use stepwise logistic regression to complete our logistic regression analyses. Now a little bit for the description of the sample. Of the 9, 10, 32 women reported that they'd never had a pap test, and 184 said they had a pap test more than a year ago. So we combined those two, and we treated those women as women who had not had a pap test according to IDSA screening guidelines. So approximately 24% of our sample of women who were in care in the first 4 months of 2007 said they did not have a pap test within the past year. And a little bit about the characteristics of those individuals. We see that women who were older, greater than or equal age 45, were more likely to say they had a pap test more than a year ago, though the differences in the age groups were not significantly different. Black women were more likely, slightly higher, 25% compared to 24%, and white and Hispanic women to report that they did not have, that they had a pap smear greater than a year ago. And those with less than a high school education compared to those with a high school education or more were more likely to say they had a pap more than a year ago. And none of these differences were significant using a chi-square test. And again, we looked at time since last care. So this was computed between the time the woman said they were last and they last received care up until the date of interview. And women who had not received care more than 3 months ago were more likely, though not at 5% at 0.07, more likely to say they had a pap more than a year ago. As you see, 906 compared to 910, over 90% of our women said they did have a usual place of care, and 24% is our percentage for the entire sample. When we looked at most recent CD4, which is an indication of whether how sick the woman may have been, we see that women who had a CD4 less than 200 were highly likely to not to have had a pap more than a year ago. In fact, 31% compared to 23%. For additional bivariate analyses, these are presenting the unadjusted odds. When we look at, I'm just going to point out the significant factors. For women who received public assistance, they were more likely to have not received an annual pap within the past year, as well as women who did not receive care from an OBGYN. And again, if you, referring back to the last slide as well, for those who received medical care more than 3 months since interview, they were significant at 0.08, which is at the 10%, but not at our normal 5%. But though high enough to actually pay some attention to. These are focusing more on preventive healthcare measures. When we asked whether they were tested for STDs in the past year, those who were not tested for STDs had not received an influenza vaccination and had never received a hepatitis vaccination were all significantly associated with factors for not receiving an annual PAP. We asked a series of questions about whether or not you had discussions with your physicians about safer sex, and individuals could report that they always did more than half of the visits, less than half of the visits, or never. When we looked at individuals who said, when we grouped them, people who said they had less than one half of doing one, less than one half of the visits had discussions with their healthcare provider about safe sex, they were significantly more likely to have not had a pap test in the past year, as well as those who said they never talked about safer sex. In our multivariate model, again, we put those factors that had at least a 0.10, people's 0.10, In our multivariate model, we saw that we had our factors. These are factors that stood out at least 0.5 less. Multivariate factors are those who received public assistance, had not been tested for STD in the past year, did not receive a care from an OBGYN, did not receive a flu vaccination in the past year, and also said that they had discussions at less than a half of visits with an HIV care provider. With each study, there are limitations, and this data, we must remember, may not represent all women living with HIV infection. The population of inference in this case were women who were in care for HIV during a four-period time period. And this population, they were interviewed between 2007 and 2008, but they must have been in care in January through April of 2007. This is based strictly on self-reported data. Even though we have medical record data, we have not validated their responses using the medical record data. There could be some possible recall bias. People could have forgotten when they had a PAP, as we saw in my limitations and exclusions before. I had to exclude 96 women who couldn't tell me if or when they had a PAP smear. And we were unable to weight the data to make this data nationally representative because of the constraints in 2007. Beginning in 2009, we have increased our sample size and our data is weighted, and part of our intentions are to look at this data again using our 2009 data to make national representative estimates. In summary, about 24% of HIV-infected women who had at least one HIV care visit within the past year did not have a PAP test. And we must remember that this estimate does exclude women who have not entered care or did not have an HIV care visit in 2007. And again, the factors associated with not receiving a PAP test is no care from an OBGYN, receipt of public assistance, lack of receipt of preventive health services, and particularly the influenza vaccination and testing for sexually transmitted diseases. And the last one that I don't have here is discussions with an HIV or HIV care provider in less than half of visits. HIV-infected women are at risk of developing cervical cancer, which could be prevented through early detection with the use of PAP tests. 24% of these women receiving care did not have their last annual PAP test. And these proportions of women who did not have their PAP test are similar to several reported studies. In particular, there is an HIV cost and service utilization study that was actually done in 1996, and it showed about 19% of women in care did not receive their PAP test. There is a SHAS, our Supplemental to HIV Surveillance Project, which was also a study conducted by CDC, looked at trends between 2000 to 2004, and they estimated about 23% of the women did not receive a PAP within the past year. And another important point is this is an opportunity for provider and patients to have a discussion about cervical cancer screening, particularly about the use of PAP tests. Our recommendations, one, are to encourage healthcare providers to provide cervical cancer screening for all HIV-infected women as recommended by guidelines. Secondly, it's important, as we've had many discussions here within this conference, to empower women to actually stay engaged within medical care. It's important not only for women who are HIV negative, but as well as HIV positive, to particularly understand what are the guidelines and the importance of having these discussions to make sure that pap smears appear at a regular time interval. So we want to educate women about the guidelines and the importance to adherence of these guidelines and the importance of obtaining pap tests, as I just said. I want to acknowledge all of the MMP participants who have been diligent about completing interviews for us, as well as the facilities. We have a community advisory board and a provider advisory board who have been most supportive of the project and all of our data collection efforts, and particularly the coordinators, investigators, and members of the clinical outcomes team who have been supportive of this project. Thank you, and welcome any comments and questions.